You're listening to the Wine Country Live Morning Show with Barry Martin
on KVON Napa, 1440 AM at KVON.com.
And time now to get into some tech talk with friends from our neighbors here at South Napa Century Center, CEG. And with us is Dylan Williams. Good morning.
Good morning.
It tells me here that you are the senior IT consultant. Is that the correct title?
That is correct.
The senior IT consultant or a senior IT consultant?
I am the senior IT consultant.
Congratulations.
Yes.
All right.
Thank you. Being
neighbors here to us, I've seen how busy your company has been. It was busy before, but when the pandemic came in, everything changed. We're going to talk a little bit about that today in terms of what it has caused and sort of this ripple effect through the work that you do. First of all, take us back a little more than a year ago. When did you guys recognize that your work was going to change?
So I think that in the last 5 to 10 years, really, the availability of people to work from home or work remotely or have remote access to services has really grown quite a bit. 10 years ago, I wouldn't have recommended it for anything. 5 years ago, even, it was still a little flaky and there were still a lot of, you know, buggy issues. Fortunately, in the last 3 years especially, the availability of services and getting people access to resources remotely has become such that we can now allow, you know, full workforces to work from home all the time. And that's not just, you know, data entry, like Excel spreadsheet type stuff. There are game design companies now that their entire workforce works from home. And, you know, if you can imagine, that's motion capture and, you know, graphic design and pretty intense stuff. So that stuff has expanded so much that we're now in a place where that's much more doable than it used to be.
Hmm. And that's the broadband, and that's you know, your internet connection, right?
Speed. Exactly. Yeah. I mean, it's a combination of your internet connection, which, you know, DSL only widely became available about 20 years ago, and faster internet services like Comcast cable or other fiber services really only got to a point where there was a usable or a tenable internet connection in probably the last 10 to 15 years. At, you know, and at that time it was a really high cost. It was, you know, to get a basic fiber line into your building, you might be paying $1,500 a month. Now that's gone as low as, say, $500, and I think that's definitely helped. That's a part of it for sure. And then, of course, the availability of getting consumer PCs that are business grade that can be used for the work that we have to do.
And if you're, you know, the work that I do is remotely or anywhere when I'm sitting at the desk is 90% Word document, an Excel spreadsheet once in a while, and web-based stuff. So, you know, my demand on my computer is very low. But for people like you're talking about in design, collaborative work, teams,
yep,
those are some challenging things. What's a sort of, I'm thinking about for folks who have maybe not quite made the transition but are now thinking, I'm going to stay in the remote, but I'm going to improve my situation. I know a lot of people have already done that. But what do you recommend to people, a minimum in terms of speed? And that includes both your connection and your laptop or your desktop.
So any computer that you really are going to use that's going to be feasible to use in a work-from-home situation, at a minimum, you're going to want an Intel Core i5 processor, 8 gigabytes of RAM, which RAM being memory, that's basically, think of RAM as the amount of space you have on a desk, whereas actual storage on a computer is more like, say, the filing cabinets under the desk. So the amount of RAM you have allows you to work on a much more large number of things at once, whereas the amount of storage you have allows you to store much more at once. And that's kind of, so you want that 8 gigabytes of RAM, that Intel Core i5. And these days, solid state disks have become so affordable that really you don't want to go any other way. The differences between spinning disk drives and solid state drives, which really became apparent in the last 5 years or so, make such a significant difference to productivity that I would argue that it's 3 to 5 times more productive to have a solid state drive, even though the storage per dollar is lower, the performance increase is so significant that there's no other way to go.
Hmm.
That only happened really in the last 3 to 5 years. 5 years ago, 6 years ago, we were still selling computers that had spinning disk drives, and we don't do that anymore either.
Mm-hmm. Like the one on my laptop at my other place of work that goes all the time now.
Exactly. You could think of spinning disk drive like a turntable. Similar concept.
Constantly.
It has to spin up, and the needle has to find its place. Mm-hmm. Similar concept, yeah.
Every once in a while, I think it's all over. It goes and settles back into that other... Yeah, we won't need to diagnose that. We know that's an old laptop, right?
Yes.
So one of the immense challenges for people in IT is what users do used to be like clicking on phishing emails and stuff could disrupt a whole network in the office. Now people are alone at home, and they probably are more likely to goof around on their own mm-hmm. personal machine. So you've got... You know, I'm using my phone, my laptop, my desktop, whatever different devices, but I'm working on it now in a way I wasn't before. Does that endanger companies' networks, stability, security, set yourself up to get hacked, to get ransomware, all these other problems that can come up?
So I'm going to throw a couple acronyms at you because IT is a world all about acronyms, IT being information technology. BYOD, similar to the BYOB concept that a lot of people are probably familiar with, and IoT. Those two things are bring your own device and Internet of Things. And those two things in unison, especially, are basically IT's worst nightmare. And so there's, because it allows exactly what you just suggested in so much more of a vulnerable way. And it's a nightmare for us from an IT perspective. So there's certain things that we can do to mitigate the level of risk. There are three primary methods of remotely accessing services or servers or resources that you need to do your job. There is the first one that people are probably most familiar with. You think like LogMeIn, TeamViewer, go to my PC. Most people have probably used those services at some point. And basically what it does is it gives you a visual of your computer at a different location that you can utilize and work on. We utilize an application called Screen Connect that's built into our system that we can allow our clients to get access to their necessary resources fairly quickly. We rolled that out in mass last year. The second one that people are probably most familiar with is VPN, so virtual private network. And what that basically allows you to do is you are creating a connection into your workplace from a personal device. Most people have probably heard of things like NordVPN for privacy, or, you know, in the business workplace, it's going to be like Cisco VPN, Checkpoint VPN, SonicWall. And what that allows you to do is remote into a workplace and connect to work resources from your personal computer or from your work computer if you have a work laptop. The final and probably most prevalent method now that we've done a lot of what we call swing migrations in the last year is moving our user base and our clients into Office 365 hosted services, where all of that stuff that they need to access is accessible in a web browser. So via utilizing things like SharePoint and Outlook on the web and OneDrive, they now have access to those resources from any device or computer remotely. And we can do that in a controlled way. We can control what can be accessed, whether or not that stuff can be downloaded or changed or modified. And that's probably the easiest way for us to prevent issues, but also keep things secure.
Hmm.
And that's definitely, I mean, we've migrated, I would say, 24 different companies to that in the last year just because of this pandemic.
Hmm. That's interesting. Do you get less trouble calls once you've migrated them to that other way?
We get less trouble calls. We get more, I need to know how to do this calls, which is fine. You know, we're an IT company, and as much as we tend to try to avoid doing training, we're not a teaching company. It is a part of what we do. And so most of those calls have turned from, I need to be able to, this thing isn't working on my computer, I'm getting this error message. It's now more, how do I do this thing that I want to accomplish what I'm trying to do?
Mm-hmm.
That's what it's really turned into for those people who've moved to those services.
Getting access isn't the issue as much as the learning curve of using the software.
Right. Yeah. That's definitely turned into the biggest challenge.
Mm-hmm. And how much should people, and let's kind of look at this from both working at home for business and personal use, maybe, how much should we be concerned about security? Because the news gets dominated by stories about data breach and hacking of this kind and that kind, and as I mentioned, ransomware, which is a really frightening concept for a lot of businesses. How much should we focus on that these days, and how much is that a percentage of the work you guys do?
Security is probably half of everything that we're involved in. To put it short, I think that if you have a solid IT department, whether that's a contracted company like ours or you have an internal IT department, it's less of a concern. We utilize mitigating factors like doing things like phishing email tests, where we send out phishing emails to an entire user base and a client, and we get a report back on who actually all went into that email, clicked that email, opened it, and then would have gotten infected. And we go back and then we can say, okay, now we can develop and create a training program to reteach how to deal with that sort of thing. That's part one. Obviously, emails are the biggest type of that scam. Then there's also spam filtering, so that we filter out the greatest majority of malicious emails. Then there's putting in a proper endpoint antivirus. And when I say endpoint antivirus, I mean not like downloading AVG or Norton from Comcast or, you know, which is built into your Comcast service, but an endpoint antivirus being a managed service that the IT department is providing. So it's something we monitor and maintain. And those are really the three biggest things. And then obviously, you know, in a lot of HIPAA compliant environments or SEC compliant environments, so financial, healthcare, in their cases, we operate on a basis of least possible access to still be able to do your job. So you have the most limited access possible to what you need and still be able to do your job. And that's how we mitigate those risks in those kind of environments. Mm-hmm. HIPAA compliance is, I can't say unstructured because it's very, very well defined, but how you actually mitigate those risks and handle them is kind of up to the IT department. And so you have to kind of operate on that basis of least possible access.
We're having some tech talk today with Dylan Williams from CEG, Computer Engineering Group, right?
Is that yes.
The full title. And you, as you've mentioned, provide IT on a contract basis to businesses, and you help people come in with, I see people walking in with stuff. You fix things over there too?
We do. So we have an IT or business-oriented department where we do help desk services, project management, virtual chief information officer, chief technology officer. That's kind of our business side services, and that includes sort of all the range of things that businesses that are too small to have an IT department but really do need IT support. And that, of course, that's going to be businesses in the 5 to 1,000 range, basically. Mm-hmm. So we support a pretty wide range of size. And then, of course, we have our retail and repair department that does computer repair and mobile device repair. And among that's, you know, virus removal, screen replacements, you know, upgrades, installations, training, that sort mm-hmm. of thing.
What if you have a laptop that goes, can you fix that?
If it's more than 5 years old, I'm going to tell you to replace it. If it's less than 5 years old, then I can probably help you out.
Tie it to a rock and throw it in the lake. That process in and of itself, I don't want to get too deep into my own personal problems, but I not only have one, but I have two old machines now. And, you know, I'm kind of attached to the oldest one. It's the big Dell that was made for, like, watching movies on.
Sure.
Right? It's got great sound. I still play a DVD. It looks great. But, you know, it's going to fail to boot up about a third of the time, it seems like. How do you comfortably know that you've migrated everything off of that, because you wouldn't have it saved there if it didn't mean something to you?
Right.
And then I also get into the problem of having duplicates of lots of things. Like, I took a folder and I put it over here on purpose, so I had a backup, and now there's like probably these two machines have 50% overlap in what's on them. How do you get all that done and move on to a new machine? This is like relationship advice almost. How to make a clean break, start over.
Yeah, so automated deduplication is what we call that. If you don't want to have a personal hand in it, is still a technology that is not, I would say, safe, because it relies on machine learning to determine what are actually duplicate files and what aren't. Mm. It's really better if you move everything into the same directory. And when you're moving everything into that same directory, you're going to get the prompts that are going to say this file already exists, or would you like to overwrite this file, or this file doesn't exist, and it copies it. And then once you have everything in that singular directory, you personally go through and clean it up to make sure that you've got everything you want. Then you'd properly dispose of the old laptop by, say, bringing it to one of our e-waste events that we do, or just dropping it off at our office. We'll go ahead and take care of it and wipe it. We'll take it out back with the shotgun and make sure that it gets properly disposed of.
Mm-hmm. That's something I don't think I've ever really, you know, given enough attention to. I don't know if other people do either, because you see a lot of like, oh, I have an old laptop, you can have it, I got a new one, and they don't bother to clean off what's on there.
Yeah.
And that does expose you if the people are, you know, have the bad intentions, right? They can find things there they can use.
Very much so, especially because, you know, there's so many password synchronization utilities these days. You know, I can't think of any of them off the top of my head because I don't actually use any. Most of my passwords I have memorized. But the password synchronization utilities that are in place, the issue is that theoretically it makes your life easier because you have one password for 100 different websites. Well, that also means you have one password for 100 different websites. So if I get into your old computer and you have that password saved in a Word document or an Excel document, well, now I have everything else too. You know,
is it safer then to use the suggested passwords like Google will push to you? Do you want to use the suggested password?
Yeah, so passwords are kind of an interesting topic. The latest theory with passwords are actually that phrases are better. So, you know, the quick dog jumps over the small brown fox, whatever. So, you know, so something like, and you actually utilize that as a password. A sure sign that a website or an application doesn't have a great security premise is probably that it doesn't allow you to have a password longer than 16 characters. You know, like that's not normally a good sign. And I'm not going to name any off the top of my head, but there are a lot of vendor applications that we work with that cross all industries that have password cap limits, like where you can only have up to 15 characters and they can't have symbols. Well, that's literally exactly the opposite of all the latest advice with passwords. Mm-hmm. And that's wildly concerning to us. So, you know, that's definitely an interesting category, but I think that, you know, whether you use phrases or whether you use some conglomeration of numbers, letters, and symbols, uppercase and lowercase, just make sure that you can either remember them or you have them somewhere that you can keep secure in, mm-hmm. say, a safe, mm-hmm. would be a good option.
Mm-hmm. And of course, there's the tried and true method, writing them all on a Post-it and just sticking them right there on the computer.
I can't tell you how many times I walk into a client office and I flip over a keyboard, mm-hmm. and there's their password there, or under the mouse pad, yeah. or under the mouse, no or one, even right on the monitor.
No one will ever think to look here.
Yeah, yeah. So...
Okay, this has been fun talking about some tech topics with Dylan Williams from CEG, and I mentioned a couple times you're right next to us here at the radio station in the South Napa Century Center. How can people find you on the web or on the phone or whatever else?
Well, we have a website, cegsupport.com is our kind of, that's where you can find all of our contact information. You can call 707-257-9701, that's our local number. We have an 833-CEG-9701 800 number as well. And then we do have a series of other unpublished numbers that are for, you know, say our help desk services, mm-hmm. and things that we don't just publish anywhere.
Do you work only with or just primarily with local and regional clients?
We span as far north as Ukiah, and we go as far south as Salinas. Mm. And we go as far east as Turlock.
Wow, big region.
And probably later this year, there will be a number of places we're supporting that are out of state as well. So we drive to a number of locations within about 2 or 3 hours. The greatest focus of our client base is definitely in the Napa County area. Mm-hmm. But we do go about 2 or 3 hours in every direction and then out of state when we need to.
All right. Terrific. Thanks for being here today. Yeah. Enjoyed it. Good info.
Thank you.
All right.
You're listening to the Wine Country Live Morning Show with Barry Martin
on KVON Napa, 1440 AM and KVON.com.